Hello and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd, and for today's episode, we're going to be talking about projections and position battles. And I am not doing this one alone. I am joined by RotoWire's own Prince of Projections, Mark Roberts. Mark, how are you again?
I'm doing just fine, Josh. How are you?
I'm well. This is our second introduction. The first one didn't go off that well because the recording wasn't working properly. But we're all in business now. We had a little discussion about Australian pleasantries and saying hello. But we're back in business now, Mark. Now, Mark, let's get into it. Before we get into it, actually, where can everybody find you on Twitter?
Oh, if you want to tag me on Twitter, you can go to at Mark F. Roberts. And the Mark is spelled with a C.
Of course it is. Everybody should know that by now. So head across and follow Mark on Twitter. Now, Mark is knee-deep in his season projections for RotoWire at the moment. So I thought now is as good a time as any for people who, well, we know there's lots of drafts going on at the moment. I've been in drafts. The listener leagues are almost wrapped up. You and me are starting a Dynasty League draft at the moment where we're co-owning a team. So a lot of people need to get their head around a lot of the situations that are happening in the league. And let's talk about these positions. Before we get into that, an interesting question came through on Twitter, Mark, from Corin, who's on Twitter at Unforgiven349, and he asks a question that I brought up in a podcast with, I think it was with Matt last week or the week before, and he wants to know about Z scores and what a Z score is. He says, got any material on Z scores? I'm intrigued after Josh explaining how bad DeAndre Jordan hurts free throw percentage. And I was mentioning that in terms of building teams in Roto, that DeAndre Jordan, even though, okay, he shoots 40%, whatever it is, and you think, okay, that's fine, you get a guy that shoots 80% and it evens it out, but it doesn't work that way to do with volume and all this sort of stuff. Explain what a Z-score is, Mark.
All right, and I'll try to do it without making anybody want to fall asleep, because actually, Z-score sounds a lot more interesting than Z-score.
Oh, yeah, I completely forgot that you would call it a Z-score.
So you would call it a Z.
You could call it
like your American accent there too.
You can call it a Z score. I'll call it a Z score. No, we know what we're talking about.
I like that better. So a Z score in statistics is basically at the highest level. It's just a way to remove any sort of intrinsic meaning in the stat that you're looking at. And basically, what you're trying to do is compare stats that or compare measurables that aren't really comparable, and a good prism to look at that through is basketball stats. For example, points and steals are sometimes difficult to compare, because, you know, what is an average NBA player average in points, Josh?
Yeah, it's 15. Yeah, 15 is a good
and average steal is one.
It's about one. Yep.
Yeah. So I mean, fantasy value is all about getting somebody above. And we don't even use average in fantasy. We use replacement level. You know, if you look at the guy on the waiver wire, and it's going to be different depending on each league, but if the guy on your waiver wire averages 15 points, then Kevin Durant isn't necessarily valuable because he gets you 30 points. He's valuable because he gets you 15 points more than the guy on the waiver wire. Now, the problem is that 15 points that Kevin Durant's going to get you, is that more or less valuable than the half of a steal that he's going to get you more than the guy on the waiver wire? If the guy on the waiver wire is getting one steal per game and Durant's getting 1.5, does that add more value to your team, or does the extra 15 points add more to your team? So what a Z-score does is it basically puts those two measures on the same scale. It looks at the variability in the league. It looks like how likely is somebody to go a half a steal over the replacement level, and it looks at how likely somebody is to go 15 points over the replacement level in points, and it sort of assigns a value that can be compared and added and subtracted. Is that
basically that's what it is? It's a way of comparing, yeah. And it's also called a standard score, and it's because it's standardizing different things to be on the same scale. And the way that it's worked out, it's basically you've got that number. So say it is Durant's 30 points, and then you subtract that by the mean of what you're looking at, so the average of the population you're looking at, and you divide it by the standard deviation. And if you guys don't know what standard deviation is, it's bell curves, and what you've got, I think it's 67% sits within one standard deviation either side of the mean, and then you have it's 95% within two standard deviations, and then it gets smaller and smaller. So it's the bulk of it is in the middle. So if someone's got a standard deviation of 3, that means they're really high at the very, very high end of that population. Now, when we talk DeAndre Jordan, his standard deviation, his Z score for last season for his free throws in a 12 team league was -5.4. So that is a massive, massive standard score. No one came anywhere near that.
In a perfect bell curve, you would not expect somebody to be more than 3 standard deviations below the three standard deviations
is 99.9% of the population. Yeah. So we're talking that.
Yeah. And so that shows that the NBA population is not a perfect bell curve, but it also shows that DeAndre Jordan is really, really harmful to your team as far as free throw percentage.
And in order to put that in some sort of perspective, that DeAndre Jordan is a -5. So we'll say he's -5.4 in terms of his standard score. A standard score of 0 puts you basically at the average, correct?
So I would say that we should use replacement level. Of average. Yeah.
But it puts you right there. But so DeAndre Jordan had -5.4. James Harden was 2.6. So 2 James Hardens does not even bring you back. 2 James Hardens and DeAndre Jordan at one team doesn't even equal you replacement level. That's how hurtful it is. And that's why it's so impossible to come back from that. Nobody was able to have a percentage that high, a standard score that high in any other category throughout the whole league. So even a guy like Chris Paul, who had 10 assists a game, you know, his standard score was 3.6. And that's great. That's fantastic. But it's still another 2 standard deviations on top of that for Jordan. And everyone who's had no interest in maths whatsoever is completely bored by everything we just said. But that's a mathematical explanation why guys like Drummond and Jordan, whose numbers are just so far off the curve, they're just not even on the curve. They're that low that you can't recover from. They're just so far away.
And just to put a bow on what you're saying, the reason that you pick James Harden is not because he has the highest free throw percentage, but because he shoots so many. So it's not like you can just go grab, I don't know, some guy who shoots 1 free throw a game and shoots 90%. Yeah, you need somebody who's going to shoot 10 or 12 free throws and shoot a really high percentage. And you need about 5 of those guys to make up for Jordan. And it's just not possible to get.
And that's the other thing that's important as well, is there's always, with these percentage categories, there's always a tipping point where you have that replacement level average sort of value. And if you're above it, it becomes more important to have volume more necessarily than the conversion rate. So a guy shooting 90% at 1 attempt is not as valuable as a guy shooting 82% at 6 attempts. But if you go the other way and a guy shoots 7 attempts at 77%, which is below that replacement level, that becomes more hurtful than a guy shooting 1 attempt at 70%, because it's bringing you all the way down. Let's get into what we're supposed to talk about, Mark, and that is rotations, because that's a very interesting concept. We could probably talk about that for a long time, about value and statistics, but yeah, you're right. Everyone probably need to have a snooze during it. Let's talk let's talk rotations.
Let's do it.
There's a lot. The first 2 I'm going to tackle are the 2 that just bother me the most, I think. And because I just don't know. And you hear so many varying opinions, and people are like, I'm sold on this, I'm sold on that. And I just put my hands up and go, I don't know. I don't know. And we'll start with Minnesota, because the Minnesota front court is baffling to me. We know one thing for certain: Kevin Garnett is going to start. But starting means nothing, really. He's going to start. He's going to start the game on the court, but he's not going to play every game. He's probably not going to get over 20 minutes. And I think we can pretty much agree on that, yes?
Yeah, I mean, Flip Saunders has done some weird things, but I guess it's not out of the realm of possibility, but I would be really surprised if he averages something significantly over 20 minutes a game.
Yep.
That would be one of the biggest stunners of the season, in my opinion.
I would agree with that completely. So we've got Garnett, we'll put him at 15 to 20 minutes, around that range. Okay, we know Karl Anthony Towns was the #1 draft pick. That's great, and he projects to be a fantastic fantasy guy. And I'm going to talk about him in a sec with you, just in irrespective of minutes. He's a guy there. You've got Nikola Pekovic, a guy who was their center for a great chunk of time, starting center, a lot of ankle injuries, Achilles injuries, we know that. That's a bother for him. Gorgui Jang, a guy who's entering his third season, getting better and better. He's absolutely dominating AfroBasket at the moment, putting up some big numbers, and he's put up great numbers when he's played for the Timberwolves. So he's another guy that's there. We've got Anthony Bennett, the number one draft choice from two seasons ago, who is actually playing really well across summer, playing for Canada, putting up some big numbers and looking really, really good. Not saying that translates to anything, but he's another name and another body that's there. Adrian Payne, a guy who the Timberwolves acquired last season in a trade for a first-round draft pick, who's heading into his second year as a big man. And there's also the EuroLeague MVP, Manja Bilicic. I can say every name apart from this guy's name. Bilicic.
If you're asking me for help, you're in trouble.
I am asking you. I need to hear it. Can someone please tell me how to say this guy's name? I'm going with Bilicic for today, and tomorrow I'll probably have something different. But they're all the options. There's a lot of guys there. I still am finding it hard to see Towns getting 30 minutes a night. As good as he's going to be, I don't see it happening with all these bodies around. Can you convince me otherwise?
I don't know that I necessarily want to convince you otherwise. Can I give you a case for and a case against?
Go.
So the case for Towns, right, is Andrew Wiggins played the second most minutes in the NBA last season.
Yep.
If you look at total minutes, Andrew Wiggins was second. He was a rookie last season. He was a young guy. He went through some growing pains. So, and there were some nights that Flip Saunders was playing 40 to 42 minutes a game, which is sort of, I don't know, I wanted to like throw my body in front of him and make
weird.
Sure Flip Saunders didn't hurt the guy. But, right? Because I don't want to see Andrew Wiggins' career cut short because Flip Saunders is playing in 48 minutes a game.
There was, and when there was no need for it as well.
Yeah, no kidding. It was just a weird situation. So, I mean, I don't know if that situation is repeatable, but Karl-Anthony Towns, I mean, Minnesota's season this year is going to be measured success-wise. They're not going to make the playoffs. It's going to be measured success-wise whether Karl-Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins get better. That's it. That's all they should really care about. So Flip Saunders has a propensity to play rookies big minutes. We saw it last year. And he should be their focus of their season. Like, you named a bunch of good front court players, but none of them should play at the expense of Karl-Anthony Towns' development. Now, on the flip side, big guys that are rookies that are as young as Karl-Anthony Towns just don't play a lot of minutes. Dwight Howard did. He played 32 minutes a game when he was a rookie, and I couldn't find one instance of a player playing over 30 minutes a game that sort of fit the same parameters as Karl-Anthony Towns. For example, Anthony Davis, I think, played 28 minutes a game as a rookie, and we all know how fantastic he is. So, it's not necessarily an indication of his skill level that if he doesn't play 30 minutes a game.
No, well, the other thing with Wiggins last year, which is definitely a good point, but there wasn't necessarily other great options there behind. There was Chase Budinger, who was dealing with a lot of knee problems. Kevin Martin was injured and in and out of the lineup all the time. But in the case of Towns, he can throw Jing out there. He could throw Pekovic out there for 10 minutes. Now, Pekovic can't last long, but he can play 10 minutes. He can play 12 minutes. He can play 15 minutes.
And he's an effective NBA player. You're right.
He's a shocking fantasy player, but he's an effective NBA player. And he can go out there, and if he's healthy, he should get 20 minutes. He can score. He can rebound. He's an effective free throw shooter as well. Jing's going to get minutes out there. He has to get 24, 25, 26 minutes, depending on how they want to use him. I'm sure they want to see Bennett out there. I'm sure they want to see Bilicic out there as well. So it's not like there's not other options where they have to run Towns into the ground. And big men develop at a different rate to wing players as well.
I think that's probably the most important point. I mean, last year they did have a lot of wing guys. They had Kevin Martin. They had Corey Brewer.
Oh, yeah, Corey Brewer. Wiggins' minutes started to go up after Brewer really had gone. That's when he was putting in those 40-minute nights after he had gone.
Well, and they had plenty of injuries. But Wiggins didn't start the season as a starter.
That's true.
They had Muhammad. They had a few different guys. But you're right. They've got such a log jam. And the hard part is so many of those guys will be interesting guys. Like, if Pekovic played, this won't happen. But if he played 32 minutes a night for 75 games, he would be an interesting fantasy guy.
Yeah, because he's going to get points and rebounds, and he's going to. I don't like him for fantasy because he doesn't do any steals, blocks, assists, less than one combined normally with him. But otherwise, he's going to get points and rebounds, and he's going to shoot a great free throw percentage. And in general, apart from last season, he's a good field goal percentage guy as well. Last year he was dreadful, but in general, he can shoot a pretty high percentage. But He should get minutes if he's healthy. Njeng should get minutes. Garnett's going to get minutes. We know it's not many, but it's still 15 that could go somewhere else. So it does worry me a little bit with Towns there. Now, on an aside with Towns, we had a discussion. Someone was talking to me about Towns. I think I was talking with Seth Klein and somebody whose name completely... I think it was Matt McLean I was speaking to. And they were talking about Towns and saying, yeah, what do I think of him moving forward? And I said, I think he's going to be a top 10 fantasy guy in the next three seasons. And they thought I was crazy. Is that crazy?
No, I mean, I think anybody who listened to our first podcast about the rookies knows how we both feel about Karl Anthony Towns. He's going to be great. Like, he just is.
He can do it. Literally everything.
I mean, I would not... Anthony Davis is a pretty high bar. I don't know that he's going to follow that exact trajectory, but I would not be surprised if he sort of follows the career arc fantasy-wise of Anthony Davis, where this year he's a top 75, top 50 player. And it's just a factor of how many minutes he gets from there. Like, you're going to see excellent blocks, excellent rebounds. I'm not sure he's the scorer that Anthony Davis is. That's my one question mark. But he's going to steals, blocks, rebounds. He's going to shoot good percentages. And once you start putting those factors onto a fantasy player, they shoot up the rankings real quick.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing with Anthony Davis, he had that first great season, but by his second season, he was a top five guy. At the end of the season, he didn't start it that way, but by the end of his second season, he was a top five guy. And then last season, he was pretty much the number one guy all the way through. There's always, you know, in some situations, Curry was number one or Harden was number one, but Davis was right up there until he's almost consensus number one this year, again, depending slightly on format. Now, I don't necessarily think that by his third season, he's going to be a number one player with Towns, but a top 10, look, it could go the other way, and he could be crap, and everything could, you know, completely fall apart. We all hope not, but you look at what he can do, and he can legitimately do everything from a fantasy point of view. He can score. He could hit threes. He can get rebounds. He's a great passer. He can block a ton of shots. Both his percentages are awesome. And he steals. Matt's probably not his strongest area, but he could get a steal a game. He could get 0.7 steals a game, and that's still worthwhile. So he's going to be able to contribute potentially in eight categories, and that's very rare. Yep.
And by the way, this is not something that I think you're on the same boat as me, based on what I've seen from you. We don't say this about rookies, like any of them.
No, no, no.
This is the only rookie I would have said that about since Anthony Davis.
Yep, not at all. I look at the others. Yeah. And we talked about this today because we said we are co-owning this dynasty team and we're doing a rookie draft at the moment. And we go, okay, there's all these rookies, but just so many of them never become useful ever. Like, ever.
Yeah, we're playing in, I mean, just to give context, we're playing in a 16-team league with 20 roster spots. And there's only been like four rookies come off the board, and we're kind of saying, hey, we got to get one of these last guys because if we don't, they're not going to be useful.
Yep, because there's guys and you go, okay, look, this guy could be good, but guys just are. Like, I went through the last four seasons of fantasy rookies for their overall 8-cat value, and I think over the last 4 years as rookies, in the top 100, there was seven guys that ended up in the top 100. Total, yeah. Like 2, 2, 2, and 1 in the top 100 after the first season. And there'll probably be two guys this year. There might be one, there might be three. It's not going to be eight, it's not going to be seven.
No.
It's just not going to happen.
But I feel fairly confident Karl Anthony Towns is going to be one of them, even if he plays 27, 28 minutes a game.
I'm pretty confident he will be too. Let's move on to... Let's move on to... Go.
Let's just put a bow on that Minnesota situation. What do you... I mean, so I think the reason this is interesting, because even like the extreme situations, Pekovic and Garnett, who aren't going to get the minutes, if they got minutes, they would be fantasy relevant. Yes. Like, everyone says Garnett is washed up. He's just playing less minutes. Like,
no,
he's still
he gets numbers.
Good on a per minute basis. He just doesn't get the minutes.
Absolutely.
So if, you know, I would want Payne if he got 32 minutes. I would, I don't know about Bennett, but Garnett, Pekovic, Karl Anthony Towns, I think all of those guys are interesting if they get the minutes. Are there any guys that you feel like you want to target because you think they'll actually get close to, if not 30 minutes a game?
I do think that Jeng will get high 20s. I think you'll get probably 27, and I think Towns will be around that same mark. I think they're the two guys I think they would want to build themselves around, depending on whether they think they can play together or not, or how often those guys can step out and hit some long-range shot, which both of those guys have that ability to do it. They haven't proven it yet at this level. but both of them can go out and actually hit some long range shots. They're both really efficient free throw shooters, which we know translates into being able to be a good 3-point shooter. Again, they haven't proven that yet, but they've got a good chance to be able to step out and do that. And I think that they'd want to give those two guys sort of as many minutes as they can together to see how or if it will work out.
What that makes sense to me. I think those are the two guys that I think are worth drafting.
Yep.
In sort of a standard league.
Agreed.
I think you stay away from Payne and Bennett and Garnett and Pekovic until you see something different.
Definitely.
And I don't know what to do with your buddy that I can't pronounce his name.
Legica.
Yeah, I kind of think he maybe sits in the 20 minutes a game range, 21, 22, and you're probably not drafting him in a standard league.
No, but again, if he got big minutes due to injuries, then the stats are going to come from him because he put up big stats in the Adriatic League, I think he played in last season. He can put up some pretty big numbers. Now, this one here is probably more frustrating because he's my team, and that's the Bulls in their front court. Nikola Mirotic, Pau Gasol, Joakim Noah, Taj Gibson, Bobby Portis. Bobby Portis, let's scrap him right off the bat. No interest. Taj Gibson, I'm pretty much ready to scrap him as well. As good as he's been, I thought he's going to have to get 20 minutes. At this point, I don't necessarily think that he will get 20 minutes. Everyone is on the Nikola Mirotic hype train at the moment where everyone's looking and going, okay, Mirotic has to get 30 minutes. He's going to be the Bulls' best player, best front court guy. I'm still not convinced that he gets more minutes than Pau Gasol, and I'm not convinced that he gets huge amounts more than Joakim Noah because of Noah's defensive ability, Noah's chemistry and leadership skills. I'm not 100% sure that Mirotic can get up to 30 minutes. I'm more buoyant with his value than I was, but I'm not going, yeah, Mirotic is the guy who's getting all the minutes. How do you see it?
Yeah, that's interesting. That I guess I'm not convinced that Taj Gibson's time as a significant role player is over.
Okay.
We just don't know anything about Fred Hoiberg. Like, I don't know. I think we know that he is more interested on being proficient on the offensive end than Thibodeau is, but that's not saying a lot. We don't know sort of the rotations that he wants to run. It's hard to see him not playing any of those guys, but when you start doing the math on it, it becomes impossible that he doesn't sit out one of those guys a little bit. Like I can just share this right now. In our projections right now, we have Gibson at 20. We have Mirotić at 25. We have Noah at 27. We have Gasol at 31. And we can still adjust those and change those as news comes out. But Mirotić can be valuable at 25 minutes a game, which is why I think people get excited about him. I have a hard time seeing him get over Noah, though. I'm kind of with you there.
Yeah, I don't see him getting above Pau. I can see him maybe getting equal to Noah, and that might be 26 to 27. But I think that the talk of him being their best player, as much as Matt Smith is trying to convince me that he's going to be get the most minutes out of all their front court guys. And if he did, he's gonna have tremendous fantasy vote. I just don't see it happening over Pau and over Noah. And this is all withholding injuries. Like, I can't predict injuries. If someone goes down, then everything changes. But with the way things are, and there's these four guys there, I'm still not convinced that he gets big minutes. Now, Mark, I want to interrupt this discussion because we're talking about this draft and we are now on the clock in this draft, Mark. So someone has made that selection and the guy that we were hoping was going to be available is still available.
Okay.
Shabazz Muhammad just went the pick above us, so we're going to look at taking Frank Kaminsky because in this league we need to take two guys who were in this rookie class, and we made the decision that we're going to take Kaminsky because after that we don't really know what we're going to get with a lot of these players, and we think that Kaminsky might have an okay role, at least better than some of the other guys who are out there. So we have been saved from that difficult decision.
Yeah, and it's not even a great option to take Kaminsky.
It's not.
The other option. I mean, we're basically taking like Willie Cauley-Stein or Justice Winslow, who probably aren't going to have a big role their first season.
So. Yeah, we think the opportunity for Kaminsky to have a role is there. I just thought I'd interrupt this podcast to let you know about that, Mark, as it came through, and I'll send through that email in a sec.
So this is another one that's interesting because again, all four guys fantasy relevant if they play 32 minutes a game. So, I mean. So what do you do? I mean, I guess we kind of both agree, and I don't know that we have a good reason to do this, but we're saying stay away from Gibson. And I think probably even if the role was there, he's had such injury problems and his fantasy upside is limited enough that I would guess I would not be I'm fine with using him off the waiver wire for blocks as needed if he's getting playing.
I think that's about right. And I did just have an email come through from Tim, who's watching the podcast live, to help us with our pronunciation of Nemanja. And his surname, according to Tim, is Balicha.
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 I like it.
Well, Tim, I hope you're right, because your knowledge of Eastern European languages is probably the same as mine, given you live in Melbourne as well. But we'll go with Balicha. And we'll see if anyone else is going to correct us at that point. But I have faith in you.
That's not a curse word in some language.
I hope not as well, Tim. Balicha sounds like... Well, I'm happy with that. Thanks, Tim. We'll stick with that. All right, Mark, let's go to Portland. The Trailblazers, they're...
Wait, so who do you want off the Bulls? Like, who are you drafting?
You know what? Pau Gasol is going to slide a lot. So if he's sliding to 50, I'm taking him. And that's not out of the realms of possibility. Mirotić, I feel there's going to be someone who is going to eat him up and go real early on him, so that'll probably be count me out there. But if I could get him in the 70s or 80s, I'd be happy to do it. And Joakim Noah, I just don't think I'm going to go near, to be honest. Unless, look, if he slides to the 100s, then I'll go, you know what? That's probably some value there. It all depends on what people's thought process are. But I think that Gasol is going to slide enough where if he's sliding out to 50, I'd be happy with him. How do you look at it?
Yeah, that seems reasonable to me. I mean, I think Gasol will still have a pretty good fantasy value. You can't expect the minutes that Thibodeau was giving him. But I think if he gets 31 in the 32 minutes and you're drafting him at pick 40 or 50, I think that's pretty good value.
Yep.
I'm probably the same way. I'm probably not going to get Mirotić just because he's such an unknown and people are drafting him as if he's going to get 30 minutes or 32 minutes a game.
Yep, that's what's happening. So that's when I always say I don't like this guy, I'm not going to own this guy. It's not because I don't like him. And it's because I think someone's going to go two rounds earlier than what I'm going to be willing to pay, and I'm always looking to get some sort of value. That's where I go, okay, I don't love Gasol at pick 20, but if he's there at pick 50, then I'm going to love it. And that's going to be more my sort of area of where I'll be looking at it, because someone's going to go, yeah, I want Mirotić, I'm picking him at pick 45, and I'm going to go, no, thanks, because it could work out, but that's probably his ceiling. Not exactly.
You're not building any sort of profit there.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, there's no upside. If he gets the 32 minutes a game, then you got exactly what you paid for. And if he doesn't, then you've got a loss on your hands.
That's a really good point. Now, Mark, the Portland Trailblazers. I'll tell you what I know. I know Damian Lillard's going to play a lot of minutes, and I know he's going to start. And apart from that, I don't really know a lot. This is the way I see it sort of working out. Ooh, not even the way I see it. This is the way I'd like it to work out. Probably not going to happen this way. All right, so Lillard's going to start. Yep, we've got that down. I think that...
They only have one starter-level player. I mean, that's basically what you're saying.
Yes.
They have one guy who's worthy of... And yeah, an excellent starter. He's an excellent player. And then they have 10 guys who are bench players.
Oh, yes. It's like a lot of teams. It's like Boston, who have got 10 sixth men on their team, which we're going to get to them as well. Okay, so at shooting guard, I think that CJ McCollum will start there. I hope that he will start there. He probably actually, you know what, he probably won't. He'll probably be the sixth man, and they'll probably start with Gerald Henderson, and his bald head will start there at the two. At the three.
And as much as you're going to make fun of Henderson, and I don't like Henderson, but they can't really start CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard for defensive reasons.
I think it's too small. They're too small. Yeah.
And both crappy defenders, really. I mean, if you want to. Anyway, sorry. I don't mean to keep cutting off. Go ahead.
No, but I would love McCollum. I'd like McCollum to get starters minutes, maybe, but I think the pairing maybe has to be Henderson. Small forward, I think, has to be Aminu. I think Al-Farouq Aminu will be there. He got probably a bigger contract than anyone expected, so I think he starts at the three. And then I think at the four and five, it's got to be Myers Leonard and Mason Plumlee. But is Ed Davis, who came across, and everybody loves Ed Davis. I think fantasy people love him a lot more than what necessarily real NBA people do. And I was a big fan of Ed Davis when he was in Toronto. I was really happy with what he was doing. And then he just got destroyed by going to Memphis. And then in Los Angeles, he was not used well. And that's Byron Scott's coaching mantra. I will not use play as well. So I don't know what to expect from Ed Davis. There's Mo Harkless, who has been told he's going to get every opportunity to be a starter there on the wing as well, who flashed quite a bit of fantasy potential, being a guy to get some steals, get some rebounds, hit some threes, albeit at pretty poor percentages. But he's a guy with some ability as well. I'd be looking at taking in drafts Leonard, and Plumlee and McCollum, but some people are really high on some of these guys. I just think that, much like we spoke with Mirotić, if you're going and reaching on a guy like McCollum at 50 or 60, it's high. Like that could be his best case scenario, but there's no value.
I'm not even sure if that's true. First of all, we have to remember CJ McCollum's has a major injury in every season of his NBA career. I believe if he skips one,
he's only played two seasons and he's been injured in both of them.
Hasn't he had two major foot surgeries and a broken wrist or something?
Yep.
I think he's had three major injuries. So even if he sort of carves out a role, there's no, I don't know that it's likely that he plays 70 games or more. I certainly wouldn't say it. Gerald Henderson is not a guy that I think either of us are wanting to own, even if he plays starter level minutes.
He can score. He can't do a huge amount else. He had a stretch where he got assists, but that's not his game. He can't hit threes. Defensive numbers aren't normally there. Yeah, he's a plop.
He's a solid defender. He can, if like really impressive dunks out of almost nowhere were a category, he would be good at that.
That's true.
But beyond that, and you didn't even mention some guys like Noah Vonleh.
Yep.
JJ Colley swears to me that Alan Crabb is going to be a worthwhile player this year. I'll believe it when I see it.
He was impressive at Summer League, Crabb, and he was a big pile of zeros last year. He was absolutely nothing, but there's opportunity for him to fight into the rotation as well. I'm not buying it for fantasy yet.
I don't think any of them besides Lillard. I think Lillard maybe leads the league in minutes or gets close. Like if I had to bet on one player to lead the league in minutes, Lillard would be one of my top guys or two guys. Beyond that, I don't know that anybody plays 30 minutes a game on this team.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
And so, you know, if we're talking about who to draft, I actually like Aminu. I think if he carves out a role where he gets 26 to 27 minutes a game, the defensive stats are going to be good enough. I mean, steals and blocks, rebounds. I think, you know, he's not going to score a ton, so he's not a guy that you probably want to take at the beginning of your draft, but he's a guy you could probably pick up at the end. He's going to get you a block and a steal a game, and that can be really valuable.
I would say he goes over a block and a steal. I'd say he's more of a 1.3, 1.4 block and steal a game guy. He could, if everything breaks right for him and he got decent minutes, he could get 9 rebounds a game. That's not crazy.
Yeah.
There's not many small forwards in the league who have had games where they've had 20 rebounds, and he's done it a couple of times. He's a rebound.
Now, he might only get 9 points a game, too.
Yep, he might go 9 points, 20 rebounds, 2 blocks, 3 steals. And you know what? And that all comes back to our standard score. When you get 9 points, you're crap, you're useless. But 3 blocks and 3 steals and 20 rebounds means you've just blown everybody else out of the water as the best fantasy player for that night, pretty much. And that's where the numbers are skewed based on averages and means and samples and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, he has a lot of value. And I really like Myers Leonard, especially if you're looking for efficiency. We know he's a great shooter. He's a 50-40-90 guy last season. He played really well in the playoffs. He played over Robin Lopez for big chunks of the playoffs and down the stretch and was able to – he hit over 2 threes a game in the playoffs, if I'm not mistaken, in only about 21 minutes a game. He also shot those threes at some ridiculous percentage of about 60%, which is probably not sustainable. I don't think he's going to continue to hit three.
He shot 40% all season.
He did, but that's 40 is also not 60.
No. If he shoots 60, that would be a record.
If he shoots 60, he's going to get a few awards during the season.
Which of those big guys, so say they all get 27 minutes a game, which is not realistic, but just, you know, for sake of argument, let's say Leonard, Plumlee, Ed Davis. I think those are the three most likely to play big minutes. I don't think Kamen and Vonleh. I like Vonleh a lot if he gets, minutes, but he's not going to get minutes. Really?
No, don't like him. I'm not convinced he's good. After speaking to people in Vegas about him as well, a lot of people are just not convinced that he's good at all. And not even not convinced, they go, this guy is not good. Like, flat out, this guy is not good. I went, okay.
That's really interesting.
That's what I think, and it's good to hear it from a number of people who are well-respected guys in basketball. I got this guy's.
So they certainly all know more than I do. But just looking at his stats from last year, his per possession stats were quite impressive. He averaged 17 rebounds per 100 possessions. He averaged over a 3-pointer per 100 possessions, blocks and shots. I think, he's not going to play a lot of minutes. I don't think it matters too much. But say those other three guys sort of fall in the 27 minute range, which is like a borderline starter rotation player. How would you sort of draft them? Plumlee, Leonard, and
Leonard first to me. Leonard, Plumlee, Davis. I think because Leonard's more diverse, scoring, rebounding, threes, good percentages, and then blocks as well. Whereas Plumlee is legitimately points, rebounds, field goal percentage, and that's it. No, bad free throw percentage. Doesn't block as many shots as what you'd think he would. Like even on like per 36 basis, his block shots aren't very high. Ed Davis is, again, he's a high field. He's like Plumlee. He's points, rebounds, field goal percentage, but he can't block shots. So even he might have some more value there. He's probably not as good of a player as Plumlee, but I reckon if they got similar minutes, I think Davis has more of an ability to block shots. So that maybe puts him on equal footing with Plumlee. But I just like Leonard's ability to be more diverse and contribute in more categories.
Yeah, I think I'm with you as far as Leonard goes. Just like you said, he's such a good person, such a good shooter. He's going to get you three pointers, which is huge from the center spot. I actually have. So I probably go the same order, but I have Plumlee closer to Leonard than to Davis.
Okay.
So Plumlee, you're right. Like he does. I mean, I think you have to not gloss over the field goal percentage with him. Like he might lead the league in field goal.
Yeah, he could shoot 67%, and that's not an exaggeration.
And the blocks aren't as high as you would want for a center, but he's still going to get you a block a game. And the value that you kind of to look at with him is he might get you a steal and a block a game.
Yep, that's true.
So, you know, if he gets, say, seven, eight rebounds, he gets you a block and a steal, and he shoots 65% from the field, you know, that can be pretty valuable, especially as you start to get into deeper leagues.
Yeah.
I sort of see Davis as a guy, yeah, who's not going to maybe get you the steals. He might not, I don't know. I think he probably has value, and I don't think they're that far off. But if I had to draft, I would draft Plumlee over Davis.
But Davis has got the ability to go out there and get two blocks a game. I don't think Plumlee has. So it all depends on what you need. But I think that's where those two really differ. I think that's it for Portland. Just there's a lot of mess there. That's the best way of putting it. In Houston, a guy who's made a bit of a mess of his life, Ty Lawson, comes across and hopes to redeem himself. Battling for the point guard position, along with the incumbent Patrick Beverley. What does this do for Lawson's value? I feel it has to drop it to some degree. I really like Beverley alongside Harden. I love that combination. Houston is going to play Lawson. They're going to play him some, but he's not going to have the same role or the same minutes that he had in Denver. I think we can assume that at this point.
Yeah, so I'm really interested to see how this one plays out because obviously, I mean, for a stretch, Lawson led the league in assists last year was right near the top.
He was double-digit assists for a massive streak of games.
And I think, you know, the best joke I heard about Lawson so far was from Kyle McEwen at RotoWire. He said, yeah, Lawson had a drinking problem, but he was coached by Brian Shaw, so we can't really blame him for that.
That's pretty accurate.
So here's the thing. I kind of am torn here because I have a hard time, just like I saw, I had a hard time seeing Lillard and McCollum play together. I have a hard time seeing how Lawson and Harden are going to play together. Did I say that right?
It's hard for me to see.
Yeah. So defensively, that doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. Harden's a point guard. At the same time, we always sit there and say, hey, Harden has to do all of this work by himself. He does all the ball handling duties. Like I can sort of see a role. A lot of teams are going to this where Harden is sort of the first pick and roller, and he sort of bends the defense towards him and makes a lot of reactions happen. And then he kicks it to Lawson, and he can be the second, you know, the late shot clock guy pick and roller on the other side where the defense is already in a weakened position. And he can sort of make a lot of hay over on that side. So I can see it going really well offensively, not so well defensively. So I almost see like, I don't know if they'll do this, but I almost see like the perfect position for Lawson is a super sub off the bench playing like 27 to 29 minutes.
Isaiah Thomas role.
Yeah, exactly. Like a better version of Isaiah Thomas. Yeah,
that's how I see him running. So he's going to be more valuable than Beverley. I don't think there's any doubt in that. In a fantasy point of view, I still really like what Beverley can do on the court in terms of his defense and his ability as a three-point shooter is better than Lawson as a three-point shooter. But he's going to take a dip. He's not going to get 10 assists a game. He's probably not going to score the same as he did.
And I wonder if Lawson's three-point percentage is going to look a lot better with Harden.
That's another factor. With better players around him, he's going to get more open shots when he's not the primary focus of the defense. Maybe he gets more in. And that's a huge possibility. The other thing in Houston, Mark, is their front court. Terrence Jones, Donatus Montiunas, they're battling for that power forward. position. We're assuming Dwight Howard is fully healthy, because if he's out, then Motiejunas just slides across to the five and Terrence Jones plays the four and everybody's happy. If Howard's playing and he's playing a good chunk of minutes and decent amount of games, is it Terrence Jones or is it Motiejunas that we look at as the value guy there at power forward? A lot of people are touting Terrence Jones is on for a big breakout season. And I'm willing to put it out there that I think Terrence Jones has already shown breakout capacity the last two seasons. It's just never been consistent enough to stay in there. That when he's played, he's put up the big numbers, but he still always is held back by Houston and injuries. He's been held back by both of those things. And he's shown what he can do, but Houston said, yeah, we're not really sure about that. And I think that Motiejunas has a big role here.
Yeah, so I sort of, in my projections, the way I see it breaking down is I think Dwight Howard has his role solidified, and I think probably is like a 32-minute a night guy. He's going to miss some games, though. Like, you have to kind of factor that in. And I think Motiejunas and Jones are both going to miss some games, a significant amount of games. Both have been injured in the past in kind of some scary ways. So I think probably I see them both kind of getting about the same level of minutes, maybe in that 26 to 27 to 28 minute range. I don't know who's the starter. I don't know who's the bench guy. I think they probably play together some.
Yep.
I like Jones better. Like, from a fantasy standpoint, I've got him projected for the same amount of minutes, and I've got Jones in an 8 category league at a higher ranking. I've got him in the top 100, and I've got Motiejunas out of top 100. So
I would agree. I would agree with that. Yeah. I would agree that Jones has a more fantasy friendly game. If they get the more minutes, I think Motiejunas is probably a better player, and I like him as a better overall player, but I think that the fantasy numbers go Jones's way if they play equal minutes. But the thing I'd be concerned about is if they don't play equal minutes, if they go and want to run Motiejunas more. But again, it comes down to...
Motiejunas is not a great fit next to Howard. He's a great low post guy, in my opinion, and Howard kind of thinks that he is. I don't know why Howard hasn't figured out that, like, his best role is as a pick and roll guy. I think it's maybe because Shaq has, like, emotionally defeated him as a person.
Yeah, that sounds probably true.
He thinks to prove to Shaq that he's a good player that he needs to post up like Shaq did. But the numbers don't bear that out, but they can't post up. They can't post up Motiejunas and Howard at the same time. And Mikal has shown a willingness to give Howard some post ups. And anyway, I just see him as kind of an awkward fit on the floor as a starter role. I think they probably go with Jones for that reason.
The other thing we have to bear in mind, we mentioned this a couple of times, is that you're going to be able to get Motiejunas probably 40 picks after Terrence Jones in fantasy drafts. I think that's probably safe to say. People will go, oh, Terrence Jones, pick 70. I'm going to take him, pick 75. Whereas you're going to get to pick 120 and Motiejunas is going to be around. So in that case, where's the value there? Can Jones get above 70 if he actually plays more minutes, or is that his ceiling? Or is taking Motiejunas a better value pick at 120, where if it doesn't work out, you just get rid of him and bring someone else in, but he could jump to be a 70 player? That's another part of it, because I reckon I'd be shocked if Motiejunas gets drafted ahead of Jones in any league.
Oh, that's a great point.
Let's move on to San Antonio, Mark, with the addition of LaMarcus Aldridge there. What does his change of scenery do for him? What does it do for Tim Duncan? What does it do for Boris Diaw? And what does the arrival of David West do? And the subtraction of Tiago Splitter from that front court. I think David West, there's no point dealing with him in standard leagues. I think he's 20 minutes and under, probably. Aldridge, I don't think it affects too much, but I am interested to hear your take on it all.
I think Aldridge, I guess we should preface this by saying, I think, have you ever drafted LaMarcus Aldridge?
Once, about 4 years ago.
Yeah, not in the last few years. And I really like him as a player. Like, I like Aldridge. I think he's great. He's just not...
He's an overrated fantasy guy.
Yeah, he's just always been an overrated guy. That's exactly right. And I don't know sort of why he always goes in, like, the first round, and he's always been a second round type player.
Yep.
And so he's great. Like, he's a top 20 fantasy player, but he's not sort of the top 10 fantasy player that everybody drafts him at. And I that's been playing 3 years ago. He played 37.7 minutes a game. 2 years ago, he played 36 minutes a game. He kind of cut back last year, but you have to remember he had that injury. He cut back to 35 minutes a game. I don't see any way he even plays the 35 minutes a game in San Antonio. I know that Popovich and LaMarcus Aldridge have said that they, his minutes aren't going to cut back that much. But if he got, I mean, what would you set the over-under at as Aldridge's minutes per game?
32.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm thinking 32. 33 is probably – I wouldn't feel comfortable projecting it that high. 34 seems unreasonably high. So, you know, just the taking a step back from the 36 to 38-minute range to the 31 to 33-minute range is going to affect his value pretty drastically. Even if he's just as sort of ball dominant and productive from a fantasy standpoint as he was before, that's going to have a major hit on his value. And then if you think like the offense in San Antonio is so much different, he's going to hold the ball a lot less. I think, you know, so I think that sort of means his scoring rate goes down and his field goal percentage goes up a little bit. And that maybe has a neutral impact on his ranking.
Yep.
I think he shoots some more 3-pointers. So, you know, maybe on a per minute basis, he's a little bit more valuable, but yeah, I don't see you drafting him even as a second round value anymore. Probably more like in the late 30s, early 40s sort of a range. And it probably means I'm not drafting him.
You're never going to have him drop to there. What it also means to me is that Tim Duncan is going to slide again, probably another 20 spots further than he should, because Tim Duncan doesn't need 32 minutes to put up numbers. Tim Duncan barely needs 26 minutes to put up numbers that are top 50 relevant. So he's going to be available in the 70s or in the 80s. And you can look at him there and go, you know what? Thank you very much. Because when I get him at that point, and he gets 12 and 8 and 1.8 blocks and, you know, solid, you know, great percentages, it's fantastic. And I don't care that he's 150 years old. I don't care that he plays 27 minutes a night. It doesn't matter at that point, because if he gets 12 and 8 in 27 minutes and 2 blocks, and then that's what he gets. Because,
yeah,
there's no ceiling on it, but you know, that's top 50 value at pick 70, and that's what's going to happen. Do you see it impacting Kawhi at all?
No, I don't think so.
Me either.
Kawhi is the same thing as Duncan. Like, he's productive in his 31 to 32 minutes a game. Yeah, we've seen that. I don't know that LaMarcus Aldridge can be that productive in his 31 to 32 minutes a game. I like Duncan a lot, too. I mean, I have them, Duncan and Aldridge, believe it or not, are fairly close in my projections as far as their ranking goes.
I had that discussion with many people last year about Kawhi, actually back to that. Saying, oh, yeah, he plays for Popovich. He's limited. I go, well, that's fine. But he was a top 15 guy at 30 minutes a night. So if he's already at top 30 at 30 minutes a night, then I'm comfortable taking him. You know, if he's top 15 in 30 minutes a night, then that means that if he gets 30 minutes a night again, he's going to be top 15, and that's where I'm comfortable, you know, having him ranked. Because I don't care that he's not going to get 35 minutes a night, because at 30, he's got this value, and that's what it is. He's not going to.
He's probably going to lead the league in steals anyway, or be very close.
And get 8 rebounds and score. Yep. He might score 18 points a night. Yeah, that could
go up.
He's going to
shoot good percentages, and he's going to block some shots. He's going to hit. He's just a great fantasy player. And when you get a guy that's well rounded who's going to lead the league in a single category, it doesn't matter how many minutes they're going to play.
That's pretty much right. Now, Mark, we're going through this and having a look. We have a stack of positional battles here, but we're not going to have time to get through them all today because we've been talking so much about all these guys. I think we're going to have to revisit this in another podcast soon to talk about some of these other ones. But there's a couple more we'll touch on today before we go.
Okay.
Oklahoma City, the center position, Enes Kanter, Steven Adams. Kanter is going to get the bulk of those minutes. That contract is almost guaranteeing that, correct?
I would guess so. I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me, but yeah. I guess so. I mean, I think he has to get – we've never seen him play big minutes. I think he has to get at least, I don't know what, probably 30 minutes a game, somewhere in that range.
Yep.
Ibaka's going to probably be the leader of the big man in minutes. He's probably going to get, what, 32 to 33 minutes a game.
Yeah, I'd say that's about right. And Steven Adams is not going to be useful for standard leagues anymore. He'll probably be at 25 minutes, 24 minutes, 22 minutes maybe, and be a nice rebounding guy. And he was a borderline – 12-team league guy anyway, even when he was the starter and Kanter wasn't there, but that's not the case anymore, so we can count him out. We don't know what Billy Donovan's going to do at the shooting guard position. Now, to Scott Brooks, the term shooting guard, I think he misinterpreted the SG terminology. I think he thought that SG meant for shit guard, and he just put the worst player he could find out there. I don't think Donovan's going to run with the shit guard notation. I think he might actually want a decent player out there. So I don't know if Morrow's going to be out there, if Daniel Waiters is going to be out there, if Andre Robertson's going to be out there, if they're going to put, which is something which I haven't really heard mentioned much, which I would love them to do, put Westbrook and DJ Augustin out there together and run.
Yeah.
Westbrook's not, look, he's a point guard, but he's not And he's big enough and athletic enough, and if you focus on defense, he can defend the bigger shooting guards as well. They could run out there together as well. What do they do at shooting guard? And is any of these guys, Morrow, Waiters, are they worth looking at in standard leagues? I'm voting no, but I'd like to hear what your thought is.
Yeah, so I think, you know, kind of according to your definition, I think that disqualifies Andre Roberson.
He's a fine player, but if he starts, they can't. It was just the stupidest system ever. And it was like Scotty Brooks went, okay, we need someone who can't play to go out there and play at the two. Cool, Andre, you're in. Unless they're going to bring Josh Huestis in and put him in there really just screw with everybody. Like Robertson would go from the D League. He'd play in the D League. Then he'd come up and start. And then when he wasn't starting, he'd go back to the D League. Like, at least play the guy off the bench. It was like, it made no sense.
Yeah, it made me sad when he would sit there in the corner and shoot wide open 3-pointers and airball them. Like, I just can't play anymore. He's fine. I think he's a fine rotation player as sort of a defensive specialist. You can't have him as the guy who needs to benefit from the Durant and Westbrook attention on offense. And that's kind of the problem they've had, is they either have Anthony Morrow. Like, if you combined Anthony Morrow and Andre Roberson, you would have like a real functional NBA player.
Yep.
The problem is they just can't both play on the other side of the court. I kind of see him splitting minutes between Morrow and Waiters. At least that's how I'm entering fantasy draft. And I think that kind of makes neither of them relevant.
You know what I'm seeing a lot of, Mark, as well? We talk about these position battles. I see a lot of situations in the league where there's going to be split minutes and guys getting 27 minutes. Mm-hmm. And that's going to mean that the back end of fantasy drafts is going to be full of guys in platoon situations or guys getting 27 minutes a night. And it's going to be, which one do you pick? And you're going to go one way or the other. There's not in the NBA, we have 5 starters who are good and we have 7 reserves who are crap. It doesn't work that way. It's like we have 2 good players and we have 10 guys who should all get 30 minutes. And that's how so many teams, it feels like there's just such an influx of talent in the NBA now that there's just guys everywhere, with the exception of Andre Roberson and Jakar Sampson, who should be on NBA rosters and should be getting NBA minutes. It's just everywhere you look, there's like, well, this guy should play here, this guy should play here. And towards the last 50 picks of your draft, you're going to get half of these guys who are going to be like, oh, what are they going to do? Are they going to get 27 minutes? Are they going to get 26 minutes? Are they going to run a 4-man backcourt? Are they going to run a 4-man frontcourt? Like, what are they going to do? It's happening all over the league. And that's why we've got so much to talk about in this sort of podcast.
Yeah, and the one guy we haven't talked about on Oklahoma City yet, who I think is really interesting and is not going to get any minutes, is Mitch McGarry.
He's as well.
He does well when he plays, and he gets a lot of fantasy stats. He kind of piles up the steals and the rebounds, but there's just, you know, if you sort of say they've got Ibaka, the interesting thing, I guess, sorry to switch gears real quick, they seem like committed to playing Ibaka and Cantor together because Ibaka can kind of cover up. So, I mean, what do they do when they don't? Like, it's almost like usually if we go back to the Houston example, you know, it doesn't really matter who starts because they're probably going to play Howard with Jones, and then Howard's going to come out and Monty Yunus is going to come in, and then Jones is going to come out, and Howard, they're all just going to kind of rotate. But this is almost like a hockey line where Ibaka and Cantor, when they were both healthy, they only played together last year.
Yep.
Like when Ibaka came out, Cantor came out. When Ibaka went in, Cantor went in. What are they going to do when those guys don't play?
I assume it's just going to be Adams and McGarry playing 15 minutes each.
And I guess Nick Collison probably still gets minutes.
Yeah, I forgot about him. Yeah, he's I don't know how he's still in the NBA, but he's gonna get some minutes at some point. And I didn't want to discuss Nick Collison, but there we go. Let's get on to the Los Angeles Lakers, Mark. The backcourt, there's names. There's lots of names and a high profile names. Kobe Bryant, D'Angelo Russell, Jordan Clarkson, Lou Williams, Nick Young.
I thought Kobe Bryant was a power forward this season.
Yes, he is. So we'll put him in with the big men. But in all seriousness, Kobe's going to play the three. Unless, Mark, Meta World Peace is back, apparently. He's on his way back.
Panda's friend.
Are they serious? Are they serious? Why? Why bring him back?
They're trying to they don't want to lose their pick to the Sixers. They want to make sure they get a top three pick this year.
If they bring – anyway – I know they've got no small forward, but play Kobe and Nick Young there, and that's the 48 minutes sorted. And then develop your guy that you picked at the start of the second round, Anthony Brown, who's hit over 40% of his threes the last two seasons. You know, I know Byron Scott thinks that threes don't win because he doesn't watch the NBA and he hasn't watched it for 5 years. So why would you want a guy who can hit threes at over 45%? Anthony Brown's the guy you want to get out there and develop, not bring back a guy who played in China last year and really struggled when he was with the Knicks when he was last in the NBA. Aside from that...
Yeah, he's just not athletic enough to play anymore.
He's look, as great as he was, he's just too old now. And
You could beat him in a foot race, don't you think, Josh?
What was that?
I said, I think you could beat Panda's friend in a foot race at this point.
No, I don't know. No, I don't know. You know what, Mark? I went to try on some shirts the other night, and a lot of them didn't fit. I'd put I ate a bit too much In-N-Out when I was over in Vegas, so I don't know.
Your clothes shrunk, huh?
Yeah,
my clothes shrink a lot. It seems like
it was the heat over there. It was definitely the heat of the weather over there. Everything shrunk, and I came back, and now. Yeah, whenever I go to put a shirt on, everyone's got to cover their eyes in case a button pops off and hits them in the eye. I don't want to have to be sued for that sort of injury. The backcourt, D'Angelo Russell, Jordan Clarkson, Kobe Bryant.
Lou William, right?
Common sense, this team is crap. Logic would say, let's start Russell, let's start Clarkson, and you've got to start Kobe at the three. But it's Byron Scott, so that means that Lou Williams is going to cut into the development of these guys, and Nick Young is going to play minutes. I'll phrase it this way. Who is not going to be overdrafted? Jordan Clarkson, D'Angelo Russell.
D'Angelo Russell is going to get overdrafted.
Yep, 100% agreed. 100%.
I have him, you know, carving out a pretty nice role in the Lakers, and this might be too optimistic. I've got him projected right now for 28 minutes, and just as we're talking through that, it seems like too much. But even if he hits that, I've still got him outside the fantasy one top 150. He just doesn't translate. His stats don't translate. And that kind of goes back to our discussion about Karl Anthony Towns. You know, we're not just sitting here like saying every rookie is going to be great.
No, of course.
I think D'Angelo Russell is going to struggle this season. And unless he plays sort of like Andrew Wiggins level minutes, he's probably not going to be a fantasy relevant player. I sort of think Lou Williams gets maybe underdrafted. I think there's a chance he sneaks into the top 150 or top 100.
I reckon there's a good chance.
Most people will take D'Angelo Russell ahead of Lou Williams.
Lou Williams only played about 25 minutes a game in Toronto last year, and he was fantasy relevant, and he could get the 25 minutes again and do it, hit two threes. Yeah, he gives you pretty much nothing from rebounds and assists, but he scores. He had an awesome free throw percentage. He hit the threes at a really good clip as well.
He's going to get you some three-pointers.
And the steals were there as well. I think he got over a steal a game as well.
Yep.
So, yep. I would not be shocked if he's a better fantasy option what D'Angelo Russell is. Jordan Clarkson, I think, is the real deal.
I would bet anybody on that. I feel very confident about Lou Williams versus D'Angelo Russell.
Yep. I'm on board with that. I'm not big on Russell.
Force me to have one guy, I'd take Lou Williams every single time.
I'm not big on Russell at all. He did not impress
me. Long term, I think he could be very good. It's not going to happen this year for him.
It goes back to what I said at the start. Rookies just don't become top 100 players in their first season. They do, one of them, two of them. But I just don't think Russell's going to be that guy. Towns and Moody would be the two guys I'd be looking at straight away to do that. And even then, I'd rather have Okafor or Turner ahead of Russell in that sort of situation. The power forward spot in the Lakers, it's...
What about Clarkson?
Yeah, no, I think Clarkson is the real deal in there. I think they do like him. But again, he's not going to do what he did in the second half of the season. That was put up top 40, top 50 sort of numbers when there was no one else there. He's going to take a massive drop back from that. And as long as people are aware of that and realize that, then he's going to be okay. He's got more of a chance of sneaking into the top 100 than what Russell does. But I'm still not convinced. I still think he's going to go too early though.
Yeah. Here's a maybe unpopular opinion. I think Kobe Bryant, from what I have seen, is going too low in drafts.
Yeah, look, if you can deal with his horrific field goal percentage and high volume, he actually
else he's fine. If you don't play in a turnover league, you've got to not play in a turnover league because he's going to get a lot of turnovers, and you've got to have an injury slot because he's going to miss some time. But if you can sort of just get the value out of the 60 games that he's going to play, he's going to get you 22, 25 points. five rebounds, five assists.
That's the key. Five assists. He's going to give you five assists, and that is something that's underrated with his game. He is going to give you five assists, and it's like we hear Kobe Bryant's a hog. He's a ball hog. He shoots so much, and he does, but he gives you five assists. And it's the same with Carmelo Anthony. You know, Melo, it's all him. He shoots, but he still gives you four assists or 3.5 assists, which is great for a guy who's a power forward eligible player. And Bryant's the same. He can give you five. He can give you 5.5 assists. He could go out there and legitimately put together strings of games where he gets 10 assists in a row for multiple games. And that's not exaggerating. I think that he's going to have value, but you got to watch where it is because of the injury worry with him. But yeah, like once we sneak down towards past pick 75, if he's still around, then I've got no problem with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, we talked about Kobe being a power forward. There are other guys who are power forwards is Brandon Bass and Julius Randle. Now, I'm sticking with my take that Julius Randle is not good, and he is not good for fantasy especially. So I will not be looking at him in standard leagues inside the top 100. Mark, how do your projections see Julius Randle?
Yeah. I'm not convinced that Julius Randle isn't a good NBA player. He may very well be. He's not a good fantasy player.
No.
I think his complete best case scenario in a couple of years is to have Zach Randolph value, which by the way is in the 70 to 80 range usually. I don't think he even ever gets to that range, but he's definitely not getting there this year. I don't know that the minutes are there. He's not productive enough. It's just not going to happen for him this year, I don't think.
Now, Brandon Bass is one of those guys. We talked about it earlier on with Myers Leonard, in that he's super efficient. Now, he's an 80% free throw shooter. He's a 50% field goal shooter. He offers you pretty much nothing for steals and blocks, but he can give you solid points and decent rebounds and that efficiency, which that's a four-category sort of contributor, which you can get at the end of draft. Does he sneak into a last-round pick, or do you think that because his ceiling is limited to that value that you'd rather take a high upside pick and just leave him on the waiver wire?
Yeah, I mean, that's just a strategy thing, and I kind of go with the strategy that you're talking about of, give me the guy who is either going to be a waiver wire guy or a top 75 guy if everything breaks right, and I'll pick up Brandon Bass later on if I need to.
Yep, I think that's probably the best way.
I could totally see him finishing in the top 150.
Yep, I agree 100% with that. Now, Mark, we'll do one more here before we sign off on today's show, because otherwise, again, we could be here 3 hours talking about this, and we've got a stack more teams we can talk about. We will split them into another show. Let's talk the Orlando Magic and their power forward position. Channing Frye was signed to a 4-year, $32 million contract last season. And by the end of the season, he was basically invisible, which is good. In terms of what they're doing with their power forward, we don't really know at this point exactly. Aaron Gordon looked dominant in Summer League. It is Summer League, but he looked awesome. And they've also got the ability that they can do, again, we're ignoring Channing Frye, they can put Tobias Harris at the four, and then they can run out Mario Hezonja at the three alongside Victor Oladipo and Alfred Payton. What do we do here? Now, Hezonja, standard leagues, not draftable, correct?
So, I mean, the way I look at the Magic, and I'll answer that in just a second, the way I look at the Magic is I think they have six core players.
Yep.
Based on where they've drafted them or the contracts they've given them, you've got Oladipo, you've got Tobias Harris, you've got Vukovic, you've got Alfred Payton and Mario Hezonja, and Aaron Gordon.
Yep.
They're either all top five draft picks, or they've carved out a significant role, or they have a big contract. I don't know that anybody beyond that is sort of has to be developed or has to get minutes. I don't think Hezonja, I projected him at 26 minutes, and the feedback I've gotten so far is that that's probably too high. I think we're going to bump him down from there. I was a little surprised by that, but even at that sort of higher level of minutes, maybe as a super sub off the bench, he doesn't project as a top 150 guy. And so, you know, if we bump him down a little bit, I don't know that he's inside the top 200 at that point. So I think those other five guys are probably the starters. I think Aaron Gordon, Tobias Harris can do some interesting things as far as switching between the three and the four. They're both have that flexibility, so it'll be interesting to see them play together. But you're right, Hezonja can kind of slide in at the two or the three, and he gets some minutes. And I don't know that anybody beyond those six guys has a lot of relevancy.
No, Channing Frye, we can forget about him. I'm really excited to see what Gordon can do, and I'm happy taking him on a pick. Once we hit past the top 100 picks in a league, he could jump up and be a top 70 sort of player, perhaps. Perhaps that's probably his ceiling, but that's that's where we want to look at him for this season, considering the leaps and bounds he's taken over the offseason with his shooting stroke, his form and his percentages and his ability to hit threes and his aggressiveness and all that sort of stuff. So I think that he's a great pick after pick 100. We know what I'm massively high on Oladipo. I don't know where your projections have him, Mark, but I think that he could potentially jump up into a top 20 player by the end of the season. I think he's got that ceiling to be that guy who takes that sort of mini Jimmy Butler leap and becomes that, you know, just awesome player this season. I think that's within his grasp. Alfred Payton is limited by his lack of scoring, his non-existent three-pointers, and his poor percentages, which improved in the second half of the season. So do you see him making a big jump in his percentages, Lord Alfred?
Oh, let me tell you real quick what I've got for him. I think, you know, he is so good at steals and assists that I think he's still valuable regardless of the percentages. I do think they probably come up slightly. But I think he is who he is. I think you could see a jump. Let's see, I've got him projected for, you know, sort of like low 40s in percentage in field goal percentage and still around 60% in free throw percentage.
Yep.
So those aren't going to be great, but I think he does enough other things. And, you know, and this is where maybe we can bring it full circle on the podcast. His free throw woes, while harmful to your team, even though he shoots roughly the same percentage as DeAndre Jordan, or at least really poorly, he's not going to hurt you like DeAndre Jordan hurts you. He's exactly not going to go to the line nearly as much. And that's all we're trying to measure here is, okay, they're both bad free throw percentage shooters, but because Peyton shoots so much less, he's not going to hurt you nearly as much. His standard score there is not nearly as poor.
Yeah, so his standard score last year was a negative 1.43 compared with Jordan's negative 5.39. And we go back to, if you add James Harden to Alfred Payton, that puts you at over one standard score above, you know, over a plus one, which means you're above that sample mean and you're above that replacement level. So you're already on top. Whereas you need two James Hardens to not even get back to that level. So even though the percentage is dreadful, and, you know, without knowing the number completely off the top of my head, I would guess that Alfred Payton shot a worse free throw percentage than Dwight Howard last season. Is that about right? Howard, no, 55 versus 53. So Howard was slightly worse. But the impact was massive. Like Howard took 6.6 attempts, Payton 2.6. And that, you know, that put Howard's standard score down at minus 4. Payton's minus 1.3. And it's so much easier to recover from that sort of thing. Mark, anything else you want to chime in? Because I know that you need to head off and go and get your day started as my day ends, and we can cover all the rest of this stuff later on.
Yep, that sounds good.
All right, now, Mark, remind everyone where they can find you on Twitter, and when will your projections be available to the public, or you don't know yet?
I don't know yet. My process is basically done. We're
just debating a lot of this stuff.
Yep. So, I mean, in some ways, this podcast was selfish, right? Like, I can hear some different thoughts on what to do with minutes. You know, you kind of tag this podcast as minutes that are the most important stat in fantasy basketball.
Yep.
And I think that's true. So that's kind of where we're at, is we've got all the sort of projections done. We're just making adjustments for minutes. I think they should be up on the RotoWire site in the next week or maybe 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's,
and that should bring all the rankings and that good stuff.
And that takes us sort of, you know, slightly behind the curtain a bit with it as well, Mark. So we're looking at these, like, you've produced all these projections, and myself and you and all the other RotoWire guys and Kyle and Andre are all looking at all this sort of stuff. And basically the only thing we're commenting on is minutes. Like, we're looking at, okay, this guy's minutes should be up, this guy's minutes should be down. Not necessarily what they're doing, because, you know, basketball is fairly reproducible in terms of what people do on per possession basis. We know how things are going to go and how things are going to grade and curve and all that sort of stuff. It's relatively producible. It's all like, how much time is this guy getting on the court? And that's basically what we're debating with all this stuff, as to how these guys fit onto the court and fit into the rotations with some slight adjustments to other things. But that's basically what we're looking at now. And that's always one of the more important things to do when considering all this stuff in fantasy leagues. Mark, I've made that pick for us in the Dynasty League, so we probably won't be picking for another day and a half, as it takes another 30 picks or so to get back around to us. So we'll have a lot of time to talk about our selection there. But thank you for coming on for today's podcast and going through about, I don't know, a third of the team is in the league that have got issues that we need to discuss, and we will have to get back and do the rest of those at some point. Follow Mark on Twitter at Mark F. Roberts. And that is Mark spelt with a C, and C is for cookie. So make sure you head across and follow Mark over on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter at @redrock_bball and on Facebook and on Instagram and on YouTube and everywhere else that you might. And if you see me in the street, feel free to follow me there as well. Just don't get too close. Thank you for listening on the Hardwood Paroxysm Network. It is great to have everyone listening on board there. And thank you to all the new listeners. It's great. Don't forget to look out again for the rest of these podcasts that are coming on these minutes and battle position battles and rotation battles. But throughout the month of September, I'm going to be having the 30-team preview series, and that's going to be awesome. Mark's going to be joining me for one of those, and a number of other names in the NBA world and fantasy world will be joining me to cover all 30 NBA teams. Mark, thank you once again.
No problem, Josh. It was good to be here.
Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.